signing a single piece of legislation that's going to say, we, the government, have control over your reproductive organs, you know, or something that's going to hurt children or something. So I think these are, you know, we need Glenn, we need The Intercept, we need you. I should keep making movies. You know, all of us are going to have to do our thing.
Except you say that you may well be, what, running in 2020?
If I will offer myself up, if she goes back on what she says she's going to do, if she doesn't adopt the 2/3 of Bernie's positions that she said she's going to, then either I or Kanye will run in 2020.
Academy Award-winning filmmaker Michael Moore, his new film, Michael Moore in Trumpland. It's playing in theaters now. It's also available on iTunes and Amazon. That does it for the show. A very happy birthday to Andre Lewis. It's the big one. Happy birthday, number 30, Andre. Tune in Tuesday to our 5-hour special election broadcast from 7 p.m. Eastern Time to midnight here on your station or at democracynow.org. Oh, and Democracy Now! Is hiring interns for the spring. The application deadline, November 18th. Check our website for details. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkner, Maureen Shea, Carla Wills, Laura Gattis, Dina Gezder, Sam Alkoff. I'm Amy Goodman. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. Thanks for joining us.
On November 4th and November 18th, from 8 p.m. until 10, from the grassroots, where we agitate for social change with music and commentary, we will focus on Mr. Gil Scott-Heron. Gil Scott-Heron established the attitude and stylistic vocabulary of socially conscious music in America. His music was powerful, his lyrics relevant, and his voice beautiful. We will also submit a musical goodbye and a love letter to President Barack Obama. So join us. From the Grassroots, November 14th and November 18th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on 90.7 FM, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Portland. The time is 5:01 p.m. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, and this program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, celebrating the holidays with handmade gifts created by artists from the Pacific Northwest every weekend now through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, the FBI is now enmeshed in multiple scandals relating to the elections.
Single-payer health care is on the ballot in Colorado next week.
And Wasco County officials have voted to deny a plan by Union Pacific to expand its railroad lines through the Columbia River Gorge.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, November 4th, 2016. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. In Mosier, Oregon, the site of a massive oil train derailment earlier this year, Wasco County officials have voted to deny a plan by Union Pacific to expand its railroad lines through the Columbia River Gorge. Environmental groups say that the new rail lines would have tripled the amount of trains running through the gorge. The city of Mosier has to pay for the vast majority of the cleanup costs following the oil train derailment and spill.
The Nestle Corporation has taken a major step forward in its plan to construct a water bottling plant in the Columbia Gorge. The Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife today approved a water transfer from the city of Cascade Locks, bringing the Nestle water bottling plant one step closer to reality. The transfer was approved despite a county ballot measure this past May in which voters in Hood River County voted to ban commercial bottled water plants in the county. City officials in Cascade Locks told KGW News that they are trying to find a way for the city government to override this citizen initiative in order to force the plan for the bottled water plant against the local citizens' wishes.
In less than 2 weeks, the campaign to write in Teresa Rayford for Multnomah County Sheriff has gained significant momentum. KBOO's Ray Bodwell and Jenka Soderberg have more.
Today, the Portland State University Student Union and the coalition known as Disarm PSU announced their endorsement of write-in candidate Teresa Rayford from Multnomah County Sheriff. Rayford announced her write-in campaign just over a week ago. The campaign has quickly gained traction among people in the county who have felt disenfranchised by the local police and correctional system. Rayford is well known as a local activist against police brutality, violence, and racial profiling. KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with Olivia Pace, a student organizer at Portland State University.
Today we are out trying to get the word out that you can still write in Teresa for Multnomah County Sheriff. PSU / Disarm PSU has officially endorsed Teresa. Disarm PSU was essentially a call for disarming our campus security and decreasing the capacity for state violence on our campus. And we know that electing somebody like Teresa as our sheriff is going to work toward those goals in Portland.
KBOO also spoke with Rayford at the event today.
You have a write-in campaign for Multnomah County Sheriff. Can you tell us about that?
Well, actually, I found out about it on the morning of the 23rd. A lot of my friends had started writing my name in on their ballots as of the 21st of October. So I did my research. I checked the elections board. I contacted them. And when I found out the rules around the write-ins for sheriff, I decided to make an announcement that I would accept a challenge from our community to put me in a position of public service. Chief Reese just resigned currently from the Portland Police Department, and he's running against himself in a position that hasn't had anyone go fully to term. And then the issues around that are some of the same issues that we've been out here advocating for and looking for accountability so that we can have proper reporting and we can design and dismantle systems that are promoting racism or even just the overrepresentation of blacks in their jails. So for this timing, I think it's perfect. I've been having conversations with the Department of Corrections over the last couple of months in regards to the safety of prisoners, transport, different issues with their social programming and everything like that. So I have a little bit of insight on how those operations work. But what I look at as far as having an opportunity in the sheriff's position is not only the management of those jails, but being able to advocate from a position of power.
Is there any place that people can look for more information about your write-in campaign? Is there a Facebook page or anything like that?
Absolutely. We have a Facebook page, which is called Write In Teresa Rayford. That's TERESSARAIFORD. It can be found on Facebook. Again, it's Write In Teresa Rayford. I think that's also the link. Join the campaign page. Check those things out. Give us advice on things you think we need to be focused on, and let's make it happen.
I've been speaking with Teresa Rayford, a write-in candidate for Multnomah County Sheriff in this year's election. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
Oregon is on track to have a record-breaking voter turnout. Over 1 million people have already submitted their ballot, exceeding the number by this time in 2012 and 2008 by about 200,000 votes. The turnout so far represents 41% of all eligible registered voters in the state. The number of registered voters has increased by about 230,000 since the implementation of the Motor Voter Act that was implemented on January 1st of this year. This act registers you to vote when you make a change to your driver's license. Even when allowing for the new registrant, Secretary of State Jean P. Atkins has noted that this is still a higher voter turnout than expected.
With just days to go before the election, advocates for those with disabilities are asking candidates who haven't answered survey questions to do so, even last minute, so the results can be included in a series of online voters' guides by state. Oregon News Service and KBOO's Stacey Holtman have more.
A group advocating for rights for people with disabilities has spent the last year contacting all the candidates running for president, governor, and U.S. Senate in the general election, asking them to fill out a survey explaining how they would address the issues that 56 million Americans with disabilities face. Jennifer Laszlo Mizrahi, president of the group Respect Ability, says of these Americans, more than 35 million are eligible to vote on November 8th, representing close to one-sixth of the total electorate.
We have a number of questions, from employment for people with disabilities to the issue of sexual assault to the issue of health care, transportation, education, foreign policy, all around the issues that impact the 1 in 5 Americans who have a disability.
Oregon ranks 24th in the nation for employment of people with disabilities. More than 36% of working-age people with disabilities in the state have a job. Laszlo Mizrahi says both the Republican candidate who is seeking Oregon's U.S. Senate seat and the Republican gubernatorial candidate, as well as presidential candidate Hillary Clinton, completed the questionnaire.
It's particularly frustrating in the case of Mr. Trump because Hillary Clinton responded so very, very early and very thoroughly to the candidate questionnaire, and in the primary saw the same happen with Jeb Bush and John Kasich and other Republicans.
She adds there is a voter guide for each state, and they've posted answers by national and state candidates at the respectabilityreport.org. For Oregon News Service and KBU News, this is Stacey Holtman.
The Portland City Council heard testimony yesterday on a measure to increase transparency in local elections. A coalition of 30 local grassroots organizations called A Voice for All brought an open and accountable elections proposal to the council, calling for a citizen-funded election program where small-dollar contributions to citywide candidates are matched with public funds, one in which candidates who opt into the program would not be able to accept contributions above $250 from any single contributor, and the proposed ordinance includes strong enforcement and anti-fraud provisions and allocates resources for administrating the program. Similar programs have passed and are currently in effect in New York City, Los Angeles, and the states of Connecticut, Maine, and Arizona.
Oregon voters, if you did not get your ballot in the mail yesterday, you will need to bring it to a drop site or county election office in your area. Most local libraries have drop sites, and there's one at Pioneer Courthouse Square at Southwest Broadway and Morrison. The deadline to drop off ballots at drop sites is this coming Tuesday, November 8th, by 8 p.m.
11 Oregon counties have filed a lawsuit against the mortgage industry company MERS, M-E-R-S. MERS stands for the Mortgage Electronic Registration System, and it's the same company that has faced lawsuits in a dozen states for robo-signing mortgages, illegally changing beneficiaries, and withholding public information. The new lawsuit in Oregon charges MERS with failing to pay recording fees to county governments.
You're listening to the KBU Evening News. Stay tuned for Counterspin at 5:30, followed by Bread and Roses at 6. At 7, a special live program on the Liberian Gospel Music Award Ceremony coming up November 7th in Portland. Tomorrow's weather, rain with temperatures in the mid-50s, and then similar conditions east of the Cascades. Don't forget, this Saturday night, Daylight Savings Time starts. Spring forward and fall back. On this date in 1992, Carol Moseley Brown became the first African-American elected to be to the U.S. Senate. And on this date in 2008, Barack Obama was elected as the 44th President of the United States, the first African-American elected to the position. The quote of the day is from Carol Moseley Brown. She said, "I've always maintained that black people and women suffer from a presumption of incompetence. The burdens of proof are different. It just gets so tiresome." She also said, "It doesn't matter if you came to this country on the Mayflower or a slave ship, through Ellis Island or the Rio Grande. We're all in the same boat now."
The latest in worker-related news from our friends at laborradio.org.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News, a production of Diversified Media Enterprises. I'm Doug Cunningham. TWU 234 President Willie Brown says that SEPTA stonewalled labor contract talks for months, but the union is prepared to bargain day or night to settle the strike. Brown says the union won't apologize for trying to maintain affordable health care for workers and their families. Brown says despite the difficulty in dealing with SEPTA management, progress has been made toward ending the strike. Brown says the union is engaged in give and take, but it's, quote, not helpful to suggest that the union suspend the strike for the election without a new contract agreement. SEIU Healthcare and a coalition of other groups are calling on the state of Illinois to sue Wall Street banks. They say it's to recover money lost in predatory financial deals. The grassroots coalition is also calling on Governor Bruce Rauner to not sign away the state's right to sue the banks in any new deals struck with Wall Street. SEIU wants the state to sue the banks, and the union says in other cases, the tactic has succeeded. SEIU also says there needs to be greater transparency into these deals before they're signed. In these final days before the November 8th election, Unite Here is doubling down on its ground operation for Hillary Clinton. In Nevada, Unite Here doubled the size of its ground effort to get out the vote. Unite Here members will canvass up to 10 hours a day, door to door. Unite Here members from across the country came to Nevada to strengthen the union's electoral effort. Unite Here says its top political priority this year is to protect the health care benefits of the 156 million Americans who get insurance through their jobs. And the union says Clinton is committed to working to fix problems with the Affordable Care Act to keep what works and fix what doesn't. Unite Here says its political program is built on the tenacity and grit of housekeepers, cooks, cocktail waitresses, food servers, bellmen, and porters. Big business money, including millions of dollars from Anthem, is being used to fight hard against a very close ballot initiative in Colorado. Amendment 69 would create single-payer health insurance for all who live in Colorado, a Medicare for All kind of plan called Colorado Care. Donna Smith of Healthcare for All Colorado.
It's very close. It's as close as a state can get. And we're working hard. We have just a few days to go, and a lot of ballots are being sent in now, so we're working very hard to canvass and phone call and reach out to people. As you might expect, the usual suspects are raising opposition. We've had insurance companies. Anthem has spent millions of dollars already and had committed to spend many millions more.
Brought to you by Union Active, your certified iOS and Android mobile app developer, offering high-quality, union-made mobile apps backed by a support team which upgrades your product to every new mobile operating system. Features, pricing, and examples are online at unionactive.com.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Today, the FBI said Al-Qaeda might attack inside the United States on Monday, the day before the elections. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said he was informed of threats against the country earlier this week. Federal officials say they have alerted joint terrorism task forces in Texas, Virginia, and New York, but declined to say publicly which sites were threatened. The FBI itself is under scrutiny as critics call into question the motives of Director James B. Comey. Comey announced a potential investigation of Hillary Clinton last week against the wishes of the Department of Justice. It has impacted her standing in the polls.
The FBI apparently investigated itself this week to find out where a series of pro-Donald Trump tweets sent out on one of its own accounts came from. On October 30th, the FBI Records Division started tweeting positive comments about Trump and his family, describing Trump's often reviled father, Fred, as a, quote, philanthropist. This when Fred Trump openly benefited from racist housing laws in New York City and refused to rent to people of color. In addition, last week, the FBI Twitter account tweeted links to documents it described as previously unseen reports on Bill Clinton's controversial pardon of white-collar criminal Mark Rich. But after journalists investigated, they found nothing new in the material. A spokeswoman for the FBI told Newsweek Tuesday that the tweets were due, quote, to a system repair, end quote. The Hatch Act prohibits federal employees from advocating for any candidate or measure in elections, but the past week has seen the FBI repeatedly accused of deliberately damaging the Hillary Clinton campaign.
Is the FBI leaking information to the Trump campaign? Political observers reacted with alarm this afternoon when former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani said he knew that the FBI was planning to review more Clinton emails prior to the public announcement by FBI Director James Comey. Giuliani made the statement during an appearance on Fox and Friends. He said that he had expected FBI Director Comey's announcement to come weeks before it did. He said, quote, "Did I hear about it? You're darn right I heard about it. And I can't even repeat the language that I heard from the former FBI agents," unquote. The FBI has come under repeated attack about its pre-election behavior during the past week.
Fox News Channel apologized to Hillary Clinton today for airing an erroneous news report implying she would be indicted as a result of the FBI probe into the Clinton Foundation. Fox's Brett Baer, who made the erroneous report on Wednesday, said today, quote, "It was a mistake, and for that I'm sorry," end quote. The Democratic presidential candidate has faced allegations that the Clinton Foundation accepted financial contributions in exchange for access to the State Department. The Associated Press yesterday reported that FBI agents tried to get the Department of Justice to investigate the Clinton Foundation, but that the Department of Justice refused. The report says DOJ officials doubted the FBI's intelligence on the issue.
A federal judge has issued a restraining order against the Donald Trump campaign and former Trump advisor Roger Stone. The order also covers Stone's group Stop the Steal, a pro-Trump poll-watching organization with over 2,700 members nationwide. U.S. District Judge James Gwynn's order prevents the Trump campaign and Stone from, quote, "conspiring to intimidate, threaten, harass, or coerce voters on election day," unquote. The injunction resulted from a voter intimidation lawsuit brought by the Ohio Democratic Party. The injunction specifically prevents behaviors such as loitering by polling places, unauthorized monitoring within the 100-foot buffer zone around election sites, admonishing or harassing voters, and photographing or recording people coming into or out of the buffer zone. The Ohio voter intimidation lawsuit is one of six suits filed by the state Democratic organizations in the last week.
The Dakota Access Pipeline Project and the battle to block it both proceeded this week. FSRN's Nell Abram has more.
The North Dakota state capitol was briefly on lockdown Thursday when a group of U.S. clergy members prayed and sang outside. At least 14 people were arrested. The controversial nearly $4 billion pipeline to carry fracked crude from the Bakken oil fields to a transfer station in Illinois is nearing completion. Native Americans in North Dakota say the segment crossing the Missouri River adjacent to the Standing Rock Reservation threatens their water, is an affront to their sovereignty, and that sacred land has already been destroyed by the pipeline's construction. In an interview earlier this week with Now This, President Barack Obama finally spoke about the issue, saying he generally supports accommodating Native American sacred land and that the Army Corps is trying to determine if alternate routes are possible.
So we're going to let it play out for several more weeks and determine whether or not this can be resolved in a way that I think is properly attentive to the traditions of the first Americans.
Obama had little concrete to say about claims that law enforcement has used excessive force on protesters, but did call for water protectors to be peaceful and law enforcement to show restraint. The president's comments came hours after the Army Corps sent a letter to the Morton County Sheriff, requesting law enforcement remove anyone trying to enter federal land adjacent to the protest camp. Another standoff ensued Wednesday when water protectors tried to cross a creek bordering the land, saying they intended to pray at sacred burial sites. With some standing waist-deep in the frigid water, once again they were met by riot gear-clad law enforcement firing less than lethal bullets, pepper spray, and tear gas. At least one journalist was hit by rubber bullets. The police response to protests has caused a ripple effect in nearby states, with Native Americans and their allies standing ground. In South Dakota, the Crow Creek Sioux severed ties with the state government after highway patrol troopers were sent to the standoff in North Dakota. Support for the indigenous opposition to the pipeline was seen in actions across the country this week, including supporters boarding a bus in Minneapolis, bank sit-ins in Salt Lake City, protests at the Army Corps offices in Philadelphia, and a rush hour action at New York City's Grand Central Station. The ongoing protests have served to highlight the risks associated with moving oil and gas, where accidents have become so common they often fail to register on the news radar. In Alabama this week, at least one person died, and the governor declared a state of emergency after a pipeline operated by Colonial Pipeline exploded. 3 days later, it was still burning. And the Louisiana Bucket Brigade released the next installment in its ongoing study of oil industry accidents in that state. 78 petrochemical accidents were reported in a 2-week span.
In a sign that the protest against the Dakota Access Pipeline has finally captured national attention and gained support, the New York Times today came out in support of the Standing Rock Sioux in an editorial entitled, "Time to Move the Standing Rock Pipeline." The Times agreed that the tribe's objection was understandable, bearing in mind that the pipeline had been rerouted from its original plan due to concerns about its potential threat to the water supply for Bismarck, North Dakota. They questioned the need for the pipeline in a time of plummeting prices and a worldwide oil glut, and asked, quote, "Is it worth the degradation of the environment, the danger to the water, the insult to the heritage of the Sioux?" Unquote. The Times noted that Obama had said that there must be a way to accommodate the sacred lands of Native Americans, and concluded by saying, quote, "Of course there is. There has to be."
In Colorado, citizens are voting on another potentially historic ballot measure. Amendment 69, or the Colorado CARE Initiative, would create the nation's first state-run single-payer health insurance system. Major players in the health care and insurance industry are donating millions to defeat the measure. FSRN's Hannah Lee Myers has more from Denver.
With new federal reports showing that health insurance premiums could likely double in 2017, many Americans are still unhappy with the country's healthcare system. If passed, Colorado's Amendment 69 would create a first-of-its-kind statewide universal healthcare system, replacing the Affordable Care Act, called Colorado CARE, under which residents pay premiums based on income. This citizen-led constitutional amendment requires a 10% increase in income taxes to raise the required funds. The Colorado Health Institute recently published an independent analysis of Amendment 69, and the study's principal researcher, Emily Johnson, says Colorado CARE has a lot to offer residents.
We found that Colorado CARE would in fact create billions of dollars in savings through administrative savings, and that would allow it to cover all of the currently uninsured Coloradans at around the same amount of money, actually a little bit less than is currently spent on health care in the state for that same group.
However, Johnson says CHI's research did find problems with funding estimates. Because healthcare costs outpace income growth, even a 10% tax would fall short in future years. But the Colorado CARE Yes campaign says CHI's analysis is flawed, that claims about doctors fleeing the state if Amendment 69 passes are unfounded, and the benefits Colorado CARE has to offer far outweigh the costs.
So we're offering a broader choice. No deductible. We're going to cover everybody, and it's going to cost $25 billion. But guess what? Last year, Coloradans spent $30 billion on health insurance premiums. In the first year, we're going to save $5 billion with our Colorado CARE plan.
That's healthcare expert and one of the architects of the Colorado CARE Initiative, T.R. Reid. Under the current system, Reid says health insurance companies and their CEOs are raking in millions from Colorado, and that's why they're spending millions to defeat Amendment 69. Meanwhile, the Colorado CARE Yes campaign is funded through grassroots support from proponents like psychologist Lynn Gillette.
We can't be intimidated by the money. I know that's what the corporations would like us to believe, is that it can't be done.
The state's largest health insurance provider, Anthem Inc., turned down a request to debate Gillette on the merits of the proposal. It looks unlikely that voters will muster the 50% threshold required to pass the ballot measure to provide a health care for all system. And the next time they try, it may be even harder. That's because another measure currently before voters in Colorado, Amendment 71, would raise the threshold required to amend the state constitution. Hanley Myers, FSRN, Denver.
Millions turned out in the streets of Chicago today to celebrate the first World Series win by the Cubs in more than 100 years. The Associated Press reports that parts of the city were shut down for an estimated 5 million people who stood along the road between Wrigley Field and Grant Park. The underdog team captured the hearts of people all over the world in their challenge to the Cleveland Indians baseball team, starting out behind in the series 3-1. The jubilant Cubs fans spanned age, gender, and race. They lined up in front of the Wrigley Field marquee and took selfies in front of the giant leaderboard that said, World Series Champions.
Listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Stacy Holtman. The producer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Free Speech Radio News and the Oregon News Service. Our engineer is Ian Gadberry. And the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Lisa Loving. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You can also find us on Facebook and at Twitter at KBOO News. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Linda Olson-Osterlund.
And I'm Liam Delta. Coming up Monday morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on More Talk Radio, Cecil and Celeste speak with one of the chief petitioners of Benton County's Ranked Choice Voting Initiative and discuss the need to reform the way we run elections. At 9, the Old Mole Variety Hour. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia. At 10:15 on Locus Focus, Barbara Bernstein talks with